So this is the last presentation of the last day. I feel honored.
Yes.
So, is the best way to
click here? Either way, you can use the thing
here.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, great. So as you saw on the program, I'm going to be speaking today about the process of integrating community health workers into a medical model and what the obstacles and opportunities are. And I'm going to zoom in specifically on using community health workers for complex care management. So a very specific group of patients, which is where PACT has its experience. Again, I have no relationships to disclose. And I'm sure over the past 3 or 4 days, you've been hearing a lot about what's broken with the U.S. healthcare system. So just going over a few very broad strokes of how this current medical model is so unstable and unsustainable. Well, we know that there are 10 to 15 of patients that are accounting for over 50% of the total medical expenditures, and those are patients typically with multiple chronic conditions that are failing treatment, that are constantly going into the emergency room, that are not well connected to their providers, and that are causing this hurt in the finances. Despite a very steep annual rise in healthcare spend since 1970, the experience of patients is quite negative. Of, you know, the care that they're receiving is uncoordinated, episodic, it's focused on specific diseases. They see multiple specialists for multiple different things. And when you're talking to patients, they often say how they feel like every doctor, every specialist is just focusing on one small little aspect and there's nobody there to help them integrate all of these different things. We have patients in our program who find themselves with, you know, 25 pills that they need to take on every given day. And they're like, well, Dr. X gave me this, Dr. X gave me this. And I'm trying to negotiate taking all these different medications. Care is reactive rather than proactive. We've heard a lot in these days, again, about prevention and how that needs to be strengthened so that we're not just putting out the fires, but rather looking out for problems. And in general, primary care is just not considered epicenter of care delivery. And my colleagues at the office were making fun of me for choosing that image for this slide, but really, who's that, you know, last string about to break after we look at this unsustainable system? It's the patient, the patient who has to be negotiating all these different difficulties. And I haven't even included here the fact that we have so many uninsured that are really bearing that burden. So community health workers, as used in the PACT model, are seen as one of the most effective tools in the toolkit for trying to face this crisis. As we heard from our colleagues before, community health workers originate from target communities. They have specific skills, they're natural helpers, they're cultural brokers. And they share life experiences with the patients that they serve. They have a unique understanding of the support needs of the patients, and they are able to work as bridges between that medical world and the world of the patients. The activities that they perform within our model are that they work with a home visit model. So they're going out into the community, into the homes of patients. They're not clinic-based, typically. They will also accompany patients to visits, helping them prepare in advance and then being with them to debrief afterwards. They help identify and address barriers to care. I want to stop here for just 1 second. I think in one of the presentations yesterday, somebody spent some time talking about BNI, the brief negotiated interview. That's one of the tools that we train our CHWs to use. And this is because we firmly believe that the community health worker is not just a mini nurse or a mini social worker that can just, you know, plug in where there's need, but that they have those unique skills to really help uncover the barriers that patients have to their optimal care. So it's not just pushing patients along, really, or helping them navigate the system. They're really working with patients in the community to help them come to a better place inside where they can start to take better care of themselves. So the reason why, you know, an HIV patient hasn't been adhering to their medications for 13 or 14 years, you know, goes beyond the fact that they have multiple medications to take or that they see several specialists. There's something else deep within that person that really prevents them from prioritizing their health. And the community health worker is just uniquely in a unique position to help draw that out and to help move that patient along that continuum. They also, of course, provide health education. They work a lot also with providers. So we talk about sort of this triangle of care, so this model where the doctor is at one end of the triangle, the patient is at the other, and the community health worker is at the other. So the work that the community health worker does with the providers, with the medical providers, the doctors, is equally as intense and as important as the work that they do with the patients. They help the providers understand the context of the patient. They help translate some of that world of the patient back into the doctor's office. So that's really, they also provide care coordination and offer navigation and health promotion. Our experience is fairly broad. In the past 15 years or so, we've worked not only in Massachusetts, but also in New York, where we work with 28 Ryan White clinics, where we've implemented the PAC model for care of HIV patients, and we are currently working in training and technical assistance with New York. We have experience in Florida and in New Mexico with Navajo Nation at Sonia's project. So let me go then to some of the results. Everybody likes to see a graph here and there. These are some of the outcomes that we've found from our interventions. So at nearly 50% the cost of nurse models, PAC CHWs have provided services in the homes, extending the reach of the PCPs into the homes of the patients. There's nothing like a community health worker who can sit down at the table while the patient is having their lunch and think about what did your doctor say about your nutrition, your diabetes, or go into your cabinets, open the cabinets and look with the patient, or even go shopping to the market, to the supermarket with the patient and help them choose from all the different options and look at labels like the community health worker. In our HIV program, which has been in operation for about 12 or 13 years, we found that 70% of patients show clinically significant improvement, and we did an analysis of cost, finding a 16% net reduction in Medicaid expenditure 2 years after enrollment. So we looked at the cost for individual patients from Medicaid claims 2 years pre-enrollment impact, and then how those costs had been curbed 2 years post. And an important 60% reduction in hospitalization cost that's really driving down the total cost per patient. So community health workers, in the case of these HIV patients who are failing treatment, are really helping keep those patients out of the hospital and out of the emergency room. Mm-hmm. And in our diabetes program, a 1% drop in A1C after 6 months. Here's a picture of Christina, one of her oldest CHWs at work at a patient's home. So this is just leading me to our next slide to talk about, well, what are some of the barriers? If CHWs are so wonderful, and we all agree that they're so fantastic, what is in the way of getting, you know, CHWs truly integrated as full-fledged members of care teams? So I grouped barriers into three main categories, and I would characterize them as, one, the variability of roles and perceptions about their scope and skills. So for, you know, here, in a way, I'm sort of preaching to the choir. We all know and love community health workers, but people who are not sort of been educated into what a community health worker is and what they can do, have a very difficult time understanding what roles they perform, right? So the bottom bullet there, you have CHWs performing a variety of roles in different settings or different clinics, different community health centers, so they can be labeled navigators, interventionists, educators, health promoters, translators, all kinds of labels. I think the report, the Massachusetts report, had something like 20-something different titles under which community health workers were operating. So it's very difficult when you're at a community health center, let's say you're a nurse or a doctor and you've never worked with CHWs, well, what do they do? What can they really do? Another one is identifying which patients the CHW will work with and what they will be able to achieve. So really targeting the patients that will benefit most from a CHW and being very explicit about goals. And definitely the fact that there's such diverse training tracks and certifications. So is CHW A equally qualified as CHW H? Yes or no? There's the fact that reimbursement models are still inadequate, and for us in our HIV program, we have funds coming to us through a foundation. So that's the way that we're funding, but they're not obviously being reimbursed through the insurance system. And then connected to the first point, defining how the CHWs will interact with other providers, and the fact that bringing CHWs into the teams will force people in other professionals in other roles to task shift. So perhaps the nurse was doing education, a little bit of education to the patient regarding how to take their medications. So this is something that perhaps can be shifted to the community health worker, and there's always some resistance to that task shifting and being pushed to really work at the top of their skill sets. There's better things or more sophisticated things that the nurse could be doing if she shed some of those tasks back to the community health worker, and the community health worker having that unique communication with the patient could be even perhaps more effective. How can we enable CHWs to have successful impact? Four pieces that I'm going to go into more detail as the presentation goes on, but just very briefly in this slide, it's sort of a summary. Having CHWs be integrated into the teams, so not being some sort of appendix or satellite outside of the clinic floating out there, but really integrated and hopefully co-located. Providing substantial training to CHWs that's also supported by ongoing trainings. Having standardized health promotion curricula to be used with patients. And finally, providing an adequate supervision structure that can really be a support for the work of the CHW. So we will go through this four areas on how to overcome barriers: planning, training, supervision, and adequate resources. Planning. Collaborative goal setting. There's a lot in this slide, I realize. But basically, it's that joint work with the clinic so that the practice can identify the community's needs, priorities, and goals. And then jointly also define the target population to decide what the sort of the hot topics are and what's the population that needs to be targeted. Agree on expectations for the CHW role so that everybody else on the team is on board as to what the role of the CHW in this team will be and how they will work. Establish an adequate supervisory structure and training for the whole of the team, not just the CHWs. Their supervisors and their managers need to be trained as well to be sort of indoctrinated or acculturated into this model. Agree on documentation needs. This is a very sensitive topic as well. The fact that CHWs are very seldom able to document their visits on the same systems as the medical providers are. So whatever notes they make after seeing somebody at their home, those notes don't make it back into the EMR or into the communication of the rest of the members of the team. So also what's needed of them, what's expected of them in terms of documentation, do they need to document like doctors after each patient or at the end of the day or at the end of the week? How is that communication going to happen? And finally, also some accountability for the work that they're doing. They're not just out in the community visiting with patients socially, right? There are markers of success and there are goals that are set and that need to be reviewed. Training, like I said, happens at all levels. The CHWs, their supervisors and managers, and even the clinicians are trained. We have different sets of trainings for these different groups, and they are participatory and activity-based training because they are mostly experiential and drawing from the field experience that each of these groups have. There's ongoing trainings, like I mentioned before, the BNI, that train these groups on specific skills, and there are trainings that are condition-specific, let's say HIV or diabetes or heart disease, whatever needs to be trained, or harm reduction, drug use, and the programmatic and clinical supervision training. Supervision, like we mentioned, was another piece of the puzzle. And supervision is really seen not just as seeing that the tasks are completed or that people are doing what they're meant to be doing. That's part of it. But it's really viewed as accompaniment of the accompagnateur who is following the PIH model, the role of the community health worker. The community health worker also needs to be accompanied as they do this work. It's very intense and very difficult work to be working with, again, this chronic patient, right? So I'm not talking about maybe a CHW who might go into a home to check for elements that may cause an asthma flare in the family. I'm talking about patients who are failing treatment, patients who are we're trying to keep out of the ER. So they do receive programmatic supervision, and that's performance-focused. It's utilizing goals and metrics, and it's built around quality improvement. There's clinical supervision that supports CHW processes and strategies. This is done typically by a social worker or a mental health specialist that's available as part of the team to see patients as necessary, but also to supervise the CHWs and strategize with them when they hit a wall. You know, sometimes they're working with a patient for months and they feel like they're really having a difficult time getting through or finding new ways to move the patient along. So there's another person who can help them. And also deal with their own issues, right? Debrief after, you know, everybody who's in this professions like social workers or psychologists needs to have somebody to offload their own issues that come up when they're facing such difficult cases. And there's finally case conferences that happen regularly, usually at on a monthly basis with the care coordination team, including the managers and the clinical providers, review of cases. The care team is made up of typically a nurse team leader. We need a population manager, and I'm going to go more in detail into what the population manager does. Basically, they're going to help identify the relevant patient panel. You definitely want to have a mental health and substance use specialist resource as part of the team, and other resource specialists depending on the population that you're working with, so case management or social services. The mental health and substance use specialists are going to be really part of the critical success element in the team. We know that patients with multiple chronic conditions often will have that overlay of mental health or substance use factors that are preventing them from effectively taking care of themselves. So the population manager, what is population management? Basically helps us answer the question of where can the care team have the greater impact. So looking at different data streams, they will look at claims data, they will look at hospital admissions, they will work with providers to get anecdotal information about, you know, these are my 20 patients that I really, really don't know what to do with. These are my difficult patients. I'm constantly getting paged by the ER telling them these patients are coming in. So who are those hot spotters? Who are those difficult patients? Again, high risk, medically complex, and poorly utilizing. Those are the three elements. Patients who are not well connected. They will help stratify patients into risk categories. So typically three tiers. Patients who require home visits, perhaps on a weekly basis, to all the way down to patients who perhaps can be monitored with a low-intensity telephonic intervention. And they help monitor patient needs at each level, allocating resources as necessary. So the population manager needs to be somebody who's very savvy with data and who can help integrate these multiple streams of data to produce regular reports. And finally, if you get all these pieces together and you provide the support to be able to overcome those barriers to integration, you will enhance that patient-provider relationship. Again, like I said, it's not just a matter of getting the patient to do what the doctor said. It's also a matter of helping the doctor understand what are the things that are getting in the way for the patient and how can they tailor the tailored care and tailor the intervention to that individual patient. CHWs also have the potential to affect patient lifestyle and improve patient outcomes and quality of life, like we saw in that outcomes slide. They can become an actual bridge between the community and the medical world, allowing each of the providers to work at the top of their skill sets. So CHWs, again, can work in adherence education, teaching, medication management, and coaching, reinforcing the messages that the clinicians give in their office, right? So they become this sort of arm that goes out from the clinic into the community, but also that brings back some information from the community back into the clinic. And finally, something that everybody's interested in these days, that cost savings is really hopefully going to help us push forward the case for true integration of community health workers and their recognition in care teams as full-fledged members of the care team. Okay.
As promised, we will now have some time for questions and answers, thoughts, comments, ideas. Ms. Sue, please forgive me for reaching out.
No.
Questions, thoughts, ideas? Please.
Yeah, I have a question for Mm-hmm. You're talking about the special quality of community health workers to connect with community members. Is there some way to maybe objectively find that quality? Because it seems like you would have to identify people from a community. Is that something that could be taught to someone? I mean, it seems like the magical thing, you know, that might make it difficult to implement CHWs in a more general way nationally. Do you see what I'm getting at? Okay.
Yeah.
I don't mean to use the word magical in a negative way.
No.
It's a good thing, you know, but hard to quantify.
Yeah, it's hard to quantify, hard to pinpoint. For our programs, we've typically identified people from the community who are not necessarily of a given educational level. We only require a high school diploma, really, to start doing it. But they're typically people who can show that they have experience in, let's say, they've been coaches or they've been leaders in their school district. They have shown some sort of leadership. It doesn't need to be in health related, something health related. There's also the fact that they've possibly been in contact with the types of disease, for instance, in our HIV program, they're either HIV positive themselves, or they have a family member who's HIV positive, or they've had close experience with it. And another thing that we do is we always use our existing community health workers to help us screen and interview new members that we want to hire. So nothing like a community health worker would help sort of grasp what you're saying, that intangible quality. And sometimes we will have 4 or 5 community health workers in the room interviewing a potential candidate, and then we'll meet and we'll look around the table. Does he have it or not? Right? Is it there? Can you tell from the way that they make eye contact, from the way that they talk about their experiences? Do they have that connection, that human connection? Other things you can train on, like for these specific things. You can train on BNI, you can train them, but you have to find that commitment to the mission and that empathy that they have as a core quality.
So in order to implement in a widespread way, one thing you're saying that you could do is require that hiring panels have on them
Definitely.
The composition
yes.
that you were describing. That
mm-hmm.
would be an excellent
yeah.
the next
yeah.
step.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Having other health workers screen and refer other people who they know that would be good candidates.
Danny, and then I'll go to the back.
Thank you all for a great presentation. I really appreciate it. It's really wonderful. I have one comment and then a question, and mostly directed for Ms. Gomez. And from my experience, the issue around medication advice can be really problematic according to state regulations. So if you have a team that actually, if the community health worker really can't explain the medications because of licensing issues and credentialing, at least having the team know who the pharmacist that they can call. You know, so that would, you have all that information in front of you. If you see a problem, you call the pharmacist and they can actually talk with the patient. So that just for, I come from Rhode Island and I ran into a wall of people just not talking to me about community health workers because I mentioned, community health workers explaining that. And anyway, so that's one. The other thing is, I really get concerned around theory-based and kind of really talking about social determinants because I get concerned that we replicate the medical model,
mm-hmm.
all right, and that when we're looking and it's individual-based and you're getting to what's the inner core problem, it becomes really the problem with the patient instead of understanding that person in context and what might be the problem in the community that might prevent that person from acting on whatever the advice is. And if we always keep that theory in mind, really understanding the individual in terms and the context of their community and the context of the society and some of those bigger issues, that is could be really talked about and discussed with the community health worker. And I just want to know, is that something that you do in your training and understanding, so that we're not talking about, oh, the poor little individual, that they just can't take care of themselves, and we're there to help them. It's just paternalistic, and it comes reinforcing it. So I'd like to ask you how that works.
You want to talk to the theory part, and then I'll
No, only in that I would say I completely agree with you, and I would suggest, although I like so many parts of the model, I think ultimately, like not 5 years, but down the line, we're going to have to blow up that medical model to really seriously look at where we're putting our resources.
That's right.
One of the issues around the way I think we're doing things now with anything related to prevention and reimbursement, whether it's community health workers, nurse practitioners, whatever you want to do, is that everybody says, yes, this is a good idea, we need to prevent, but nobody's giving up their piece of the pie. And so we keep, you know, creating our teams that I think are fulfilling an important function, but they're going to get more expensive. I'm not giving up my salary yet either, you know? And we're going to have to reformat that whole piece to look at those broader issues and start putting resources, I think, at the outcomes, so that we can then, within the system, allocate them accordingly and put more at the front end, more at the community and more at looking at some of those things that may take a little longer but aren't as cost intensive and may have their impact felt down the line. You know, we're not going to see it this year or on this patient, but we may see it in a couple of years when we've, you know, been able to restructure the system differently, or when we've been able to help people access things differently, or we've been able to look at some of the community barriers and some of those longer term things. I really think we have to be moving in that. Yeah, I think your point is really well taken, that we're not just focusing on individual deficits, because there's a lot of things outside of that we have to get at to really make the change that we're talking about.
Yeah, and just to build on that, I would say that patients are seen as individuals by the worker and by the care team, but at the same time, there's a broader discussion about the commonalities about the patients in the catchment area or the, for example, the cultural area where you're working, and what are some of those higher level structural barriers that are interfering with your intervention. So you're constantly keeping in mind those two levels.
I think it's a build up that. I think part of what's happening is that it's very hard to look outside of that context, outside of the medical model. So it seems like there's a slider happening where promotoras or CHWs and the like are either very heavy in a clinical setting, or in the case of Ryan, they work far out within the community. And that may be also because I'm a cultural anthropologist, so we work a lot outside of a community setting, and they have the flexibility within that clinical setting and within that tribal setting to leave the community health center. They were given time, let's say, to go in the morning to actually work outside in a garden or in religious activities or whatever it might be. But I think that broader context is essential, and that's part of what's missing is a lot of the historical, a lot of the histories and a lot of the economic situations and how they get there. That's a broader issue for healthcare in general, and I think exactly like you said, that these medical models need to be, we need to blow them up and say, oh, look outside of here. And I think that's maybe happening with some of us that are researching.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I'm going to go in the back, as I promised, and I'll go over to the other side and come back to you.
We recruit through networks through other community workers. We also advertise in service organizations
like
AIDS Action, for instance, in Massachusetts, as an AIDS service organization. So people who might go to AIDS Action for service themselves, but who might feel drawn to this role. We also advertise in newspapers that are distributed on neighborhoods. So there's a variety online also. It's a variety. But I think word of mouth and referrals from other community health workers are really good. And there's also the community health worker alliance in Massachusetts. So that's another big pool where we can draw. And then the second part of your question, our community health workers are compensated, and they're always compensated. They're full-time, working full-time community health workers. And our funding, like I said, comes currently through foundation.
They're paid hourly.
Mm-hmm.
They're paid hourly.
Hourly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And
they receive benefits and everything.
Yeah. And how long do you...
The retention rate?
Yeah.
So Regina, who you saw in the picture, has been working at PAC for more than 10 years.
Yeah.
There's other people who may be with us for shorter periods of time because of family commitments, or some of them want to go on to school. We had somebody who was a fantastic community health worker, and she left us to go to social work school, which is great.
Yes.
She'll go on to even greater work, but she'll always be part of the family.
And there was a question towards the back on this side.
No?
Okay. No. Go ahead. Well, I promised one from this side, so I'll go this side and then here.
I'd like you to kind of take a jump ahead, because the first step is really to get a financing source to pay for community health workers. But I'm asking you to think about, once that sticks, establish what you see as a career ladder for this profession.
A challenge. Yes, definitely a challenge. Within our organization, we've created three levels of community health workers, for people who, depending on their prior experience and education, and sort of also as they acquire more seniority, they may climb up the ladder, but it's not a very long ladder. There's only three levels for us. I could see, though, that as the community health workers get embedded into clinics, though, they might have a longer path, perhaps working in training of new generations of community health workers, or taking on more coordination roles and supervisory roles of teams of community health workers. So,
thank you.
Yeah, my experience has been that looks really different by the community health workers themselves.
Thank you.
So part of what we've been trying to do in Chicago for a number of years is to have a couple of entry points and paths, knowing, however, that just like in any other field, if you say, for example, I don't have a high school education, but I do this stuff really well, it's just going to limit your career. And there are people who may choose to stay there and doing that work for the rest of whatever. And if there are programs, then they're happy, and the program is happy, the community is happy with them. That's fine. For other people, we have been trying very hard to embed some type of basic training in the community college system. So if you chose, so that at one point there was a two-tier general certification where there weren't a lot of requirements going in, and you had a certificate going out, but knowing that if you wanted something more than that, you were going to have to finish your high school degree, and then kind of a two-year stepping stone that then could lead you into other things if you chose to go on into social work. So it's kind of balancing that fact that if we think that this is an important role in and of itself, there needs to be a place for people who want to stay and do that. And in some cases, that may even be people who want to do it as a volunteer because they don't even, you know, they're the natural helper model. They're doing things at the direction of their neighbors and their community, and they're not looking to get paid
but they're also not looking to listen to anybody in terms of their outcomes, all the way kind of up through. And I think, to be fair, like any other field, I think, to be fair, you have to have those options, and people have to be able to make those choices.
At the bubble where I conducted research, individuals there were encouraged to continue their education. And it is challenging. Where do you go from there? It's sort of a question a lot of individuals ask. They said, I'm here, what do I do next? And for most of them, they were supportive of that, to continue on it at the community college or the university there in town. Again, financial structures and time allowed it. It's a tribe with a different organization, and they're allowed to implement rather innovative programs and policies, and one of those can be going to school. And that's one of the challenges, I think, outside of versus inside of tribe.
My question is more what you were saying earlier today is true. You have been preaching to the choir. So we all know the wonders about working with community workers. But what are you guys doing to promote this to the people that would really be hiring the community workers, who will be creating the changes in the system to accommodate the presence of the community health worker and reshifting or changing the whatever duties are there assigned for nurses? Because that is one of the issues that we want to address in Chicago and Illinois, in order to create the need for them, but the need we already know in the community and the people who work in research, but we need the people who are up there making the decisions to engage this. Besides, you are from Massachusetts.
Yes.
That is a totally different world in terms of healthcare compared to others that are struggling like us in Chicago. So what are your recommendations, suggestions, and what are you thinking?
I think you need a lot of stamina. You need to be present at many different forums. So, for instance, our HIV forum means that we work with patients who receive care in 15 different clinics around the city. Each one of those 15 clinics becomes like a little place from which you can radiate this experience. So if the providers in each one of those 16 clinics have positive experiences working with the CHWs and they see what can happen, then you're expanding your network. There's also meetings happening, maybe you can
I'll talk a little bit.
Meetings happening at the state level in terms of advocacy and recognition of the community health workers, and then academic forums, publications, I mean, as much voice as we can give the movement, because you're right, we need to reach not only the people who are already on board. Yes, that's nice, because we all strengthen each other, but on the other hand, we need to make it known. And the data also helps, so we're looking also to do a demonstration project where we can capture baseline data year one and then have results out in year three showing what community health workers can achieve for primary care patients.
So can I just answer that?
A couple of things, I think, and I think that's such a good question, and you're actually very much a part of what's happening in Chicago, and so you have Chicago's answer that you're a part of, that you're implementing. But I would be all over the Affordable Care Act right now, and I would be all over accountable care organizations. And the problem with what I've seen in accountable care organizations is the discussion has all been, and my profession is guilty of this as well, it's all been about who's going to be in charge. And what it really needs to be is, how are we going to create, in essence, what she kind of outlined, teams that can look at who the most appropriate person is to help a group of people get to the outcomes that they want and that the healthcare system wants. So instead of fighting about whether it's a primary care physician or a nurse practitioner in charge, because the in charge person isn't going to create the outcomes, what's going to create the outcomes is how well we have this team to pick up the slack of the appropriate person. Does it need to be a nurse? Can it be somebody, you know? So I would be all over that to kind of promote those types of models. And I will say that
the reimbursement structure changes.
Right. It's not right. But you know what? We can't wait for
that's
there.
Right.
We gotta get started before that to document. The Secretary of Human Services for Massachusetts serves on the advisory group for the National Prevention Strategy. And And she presented wonderful data on how Massachusetts got, I forget what it is now, but it's 98.5 or something, enrollment in their healthcare system. Mitt Romney should just like be so proud of that instead of denying it. And she presented it as community health workers, as the different outreach projects that they did to get people. That's hugely compelling. That needs to get out to, you're right, not the usual suspects. That needs to get out to people to say, you know, enrollment is a big deal. Bringing people into care appropriately, but also working with them around all of these other kinds of things. And not so much, and I'm saying this in my own profession too, not so much about the worker, but about what they're able to achieve in the team. That would be mine.
Great, thank you. So in the last 2 minutes of the session, I'm going to try to tie some of this stuff together for folks. But what I also want to say that I didn't say in the beginning of the session is not only am I the outgoing chair for the CHW section, but I'm heading up our statewide association in Massachusetts, the Massachusetts Association of Community Health Workers. So as I kind of wrap this up, I've got both hats on at the same time. First, you know, I heard somebody talking about career ladders, and I would really encourage folks to think about career lattices. There are many CHWs who want to remain CHWs, but we may want to have additional responsibilities, gain additional skills, but that doesn't mean we want to leave the field. If I wanted to be a nurse, I would have gone to nursing school, and I chose not to do that. So please keep that in mind as you're thinking about professional development opportunities for CHWs that you may work with or as you're creating CHW programs. I would encourage you all, if you have not yet connected with a CHW group in your state or your region or your neighborhood even, to please do that. CHW organizations are springing up all over the country. Some states have statewide organizations, others have regional, citywide organizations, but it's really important as folks are trying to think about how to assist in moving the field forward, that you connect with CHWs and CHW organizations to do that. And it's also very important that CHWs have leadership in these efforts to move the field forward. The other thing that I want to say is reimbursement came up a couple of times today, and I think that's a wonderful opportunity to have some portion of some CHW's time paid for, but we need to continue to think more broadly about how do we support financially CHW programs and CHWs as we're moving forward. And then the very last thing that I'm going to say is that, and I'm speaking to the CHWs in the room as I say this, I look around and see there are many of us CHWs, Bromatora CHRs, we can't wait for others to be the voice of what we need. We can't wait for others to talk to our legislators. We can't wait for others to talk to the policymakers. We need to take those roles on. It's just really important that we take some of this leadership and that we're the ones that are the voice so that people know what the needs of our workforce are. And so with that, I'd like to thank the presenters.
Thank you.